Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Bay City, Michigan, and is a world-class businessman, lawyer, and CPA. He was the CEO president of Pella Windows, and his non-professional interests include mountaineering and endurance athletics. He's climbed most of the classic mountains in the world, including the highest on six continents. In 1996, he survived the most disastrous Mount Everest climb in history. His name, Lou Kosciski, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with Lou Kosciski, the multi-talented, multi-phenomenal human being from the North. Lou, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack. You're very kind.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Okay. I grew up in Bay City, Michigan, the youngest of three children. My father was a Lutheran minister. My mother was a homemaker. I had a great childhood. All of my memories of my youth are good memories. But I was just an average kid. I did average thing. I'd say there was nothing really remarkable about me or my circumstances. A good family relationship. My parents were good people. I think probably the most important thing was that they loved me and cared about me, and they told me that and helped me in every way that they could. And I understood that at the time. So I would say that I had really a very good childhood and no big obstacles or difficult circumstances to overcome. And my parents, I'd say the most important support and nurturing they gave to me was basically the witness of their own example of good character. And they instilled and nurtured in me Of course, because my father was a Lutheran minister, but also just strong religious beliefs and religious beliefs that have stayed with me today and are an important part of my life, and I have an important relationship with God. But they also taught me the things that parents teach children, and that is right from wrong and accepting responsibility and consequences when I did wrong and respect for other people. But they were very practical, everyday people as well, and they put a lot of emphasis when I was growing up on finishing whatever I started. If it was worthy to start, I should finish. And if there was something in life that I wanted, I had to work for it. There were basically no entitlements in our family, and if you want it, you work for it.
Let me list a few of your achievements. You were the CEO, president, majority shareholder of Pella Window and Door Company. You were the past chairman of the State Bar of Michigan Taxation Section. You've written books. You're world-class businessman, lawyer, CPA. How did you do that?
Well, I guess I don't have a simple formula for that. I was a very average person in school, but when I was at Michigan State, certain matches were lit that I think all came together at various points in my life. I discovered along the way, although I didn't think of this at the time, but it was a period of self-discovery where I discovered certain interests, certain aptitudes. And in school, as part of my major, I took all the classes they offered in risk management. And I never realized that that would become an important part of my career in both sport and business. But I was always fascinated by risk evaluation, the whole idea of accepting and managing risk, and just how does one accept certain specified risks and take them on behalf of themselves and on behalf of others. And all of that was an important match that was lit as part of my own fire. And I think another match that was lit was in accounting and finance. I figured out that if I worked hard, I could excel at that. And later that became became a certified public accountant and a financial analyst. But I'd say in school, the third match, and perhaps the most important, and that changed my life, was when I took a class in business law. I loved the material. I aced the class, and I decided I wanted to be a lawyer. But that was a big challenge because we didn't have any money. And so I had to work nights and part-time jobs and loans, and finally graduated from law school after having slept on the floor of a friend's apartment for a couple of years just to stay on my low budget. But the important thing was that I loved law school. It was a time for me of growth, significant growth, learning to think, learning to write. I viewed law as mostly about life's problems, how to think about them, how to solve them. And I always saw myself in later in life as a problem solver, learning how to look at a situation, sort out the relevant from the irrelevant, grasp the problems and challenges at hand, and find a practical solution. And you mentioned in the intro the book that I wrote. I did write a book on corporate law, and this was also a source of significant growth for me because much of that book focused on how to make practical decisions. Because I knew the client that I earned my pay from clients by exercising my judgment about what to do next. And so that was always the focus. That was the focus of the book, and that became much of the focus of my career, being able to figure out what to do next, practical decision-making. And I think that just helped me throughout. And I always was learning. I never stopped learning and growing, and I always wanted to be able to see things from different perspectives. Sometimes I would make decisions based on assuming that I was the leader, and sometimes I would look at it again and assume that I was the follower or the other side of the transaction. And being able to look at things from different perspectives, I think, always led to better decisions and always stimulated me to grow. But I'd say at the heart of it, you ask why, how does all this happen? And I think I'd say that the key to everything for me in my case was preparation, preparation, preparation.
We're talking to Lou Kosciski. When we come back, we'll ask him where he got his love for mountain climbing. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Lou Kosciski, the world-class mountaineer, and he's climbed the highest mountain on each of six continents. Lou, how did you get your love for mountain climbing?
Well, Jack, growing up in the 50s and the early 60s, I played most of the traditional sports, but I was never particularly gifted in these sports. And if I had anything as a passion, I would say it was speed skating and skiing. But after college, my skiing interest took off, mostly alpine, but some Nordic. And I loved the mountains. I just totally fell in love with the mountains in the United States and the European Alps. And so my love for mountains was first as a skier. But then in the early 70s, with the advent of running, I found that my real strength as an athlete was in endurance athletics, mostly running, cycling, some Nordic skiing. And then as some more time passed, I found the perfect combination of my two sports interests of endurance athletics and skiing, and that was ski mountaineering. This is a sport that not too many people are familiar with. You use specialized gear for climbing up mountains and skiing down in the backcountry, not in a controlled environment of a ski resort. So my first exposure to alpine climbing as a ski mountaineer, because you need mountain climbing skills. They're important for travel and glacial terrain on skis, and sometimes you needed to use the various tools such as crampons, which are these spikes that fit on the bottom of your boots, and ice axe, and rope work, and crevasse rescue, and avalanche awareness. And so I'd say that my first development of my alpine climbing skills wasn't necessarily about the goal of reaching the top, but just simply to travel safely through the mountains. But as time went on, when we get to the mountain pass, when we leave our skis, we'd climb a peak, and that's when climbing to the top became important in and of itself, not just as a point from which to ski down. And so from there, so you can see it was an evolving process, and I went on and developed the real passion and developed interest in all the various types of climbing, rock, snow and ice, peak climbing, and so that's where it all kind of started. But, you know, I always kept it in perspective because climbing was still just a sport. It was not a driving force that I devoted my life to. There were other important things in my life, my family, being a lawyer, being a businessman. Many people depended upon me. And not to say I wasn't a serious climber, because I was. I was serious about climbing, serious about athleticism and values and ethics, I'd say the bottom line is that about climbing is it's all about the adventure. I can't think of a single time over the past few decades when the next climb was not an important subject of my being. And the planning, the preparation, the training is as important as the experience itself. You know, talking to the people, making the arrangements, testing gear, training log, climbing process, so all are pieces of the puzzle. And that every day, a little piece of that puzzle would come into place. And you know, most climbers are ordinary people. They're usually high achievers in other parts of life, and only a few devote themselves primarily to climbing. But it's the richness of the experience. Standing on top is only part of it. And sometimes not even the most important part. It's about history, culture, exotic places, interesting people, incredible events, overwhelming beauty, friendship, camaraderie. You know, every climb is to gain a new collection of experiences. And these experiences have power because they seemingly endure forever, and it's that experience within yourself and the self-satisfaction that comes from doing something hard. You know, you asked about my career, and I think I'd say from the time I was a kid, I always had a goal orientation. I was always setting goals, even from 8 years old on. And hard things to do, I'd say, are the things that drove me. And it was hard working my way through school. It was hard for a person with modest financial background and an average intellect to become a lawyer. It was a hard goal to work full time and go to night school to become a CPA. It was a hard goal to be succeed in a major law firm with people brighter and more talented than me. So it was hard. Things were exciting to me, and climbing mountains falls into that category. And they're hard to do. And so it was just the joy of being there and being in famous places, doing something hard, having that sense of satisfaction, having that different adventure and different set of memories. That's what climbing was all about for me. I know most people think equate climbing with getting to the summit, but those of us who are experienced and mature at it know that there's a difference, because getting to the top simply means that on that given day, on that given occasion, everything went well. But what's important is the experience of it, and sharing it with people that you like being with.
When we come back, we'll ask Lou Kosciusko about climbing Mount Everest, the tallest spot on Earth. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Lou Kosciusko. It's 1996, and Lou has spent $70,000 and climbed Mount Everest for 6 weeks. And Lou, it's May 10th, 1996. Take us back to that day, please.
Well, it takes about 2 months to climb Everest, and we had on May 10th, 1996, after having endured the adversity of 6 weeks of climbing to get to nearly 29,000 feet, we were about 400 feet from the top, but things started to go wrong. And we lost a lot of time. There were a variety of mistakes, a whole long list of mistakes that were made and culminated at about noon. And the risks were escalating at that point. We had reached the previously agreed upon safety turnaround time. And at noon, the right thing to do was to turn around. There was no doubt about the right thing to do. But here's the problem. I didn't want to turn around. None of us wanted to turn around. It was so close to the top, and during those moments, the only voice inside of me was all about me, and to keep going, my ambition, my goal, my desires, my work, my this, my that. It's a moment of an... The initial moments were no internal struggle because it was all about me. I just wanted to keep going. I'm just too close to turn around. And two other climbers had made the decision to turn around, but I couldn't accept that. Most of the other climbers were still going, so I figured me too. And, you know, in climbing, there's only one thing worse than not reaching the summit, and that is when others do and you don't. As I started to move up, after having made the decision to continue, something happened to me, and it was actually frightening in a way because my heart was just pounding out of control. I could feel it jumping. I could hear it beating, and I had no idea what was happening to me. And after a very short distance, I dropped to my knees, and I, for the first moment now, found myself in this struggle with myself about what to do. And then it's during these moments are the moments that are really the crux of the story of my story, and the moments that really changed my life, because it was during those moments that I began to hear a second voice, a voice about the promise that I had made to my teammates on the turnaround time for the safety of everyone, and a promise that I made to my wife to come back home and to climb smart, and we had an agreement between us that I would only write a story that I could tell with self-respect. She said, "Live a story that you can only a story that you can tell with self-respect." And finally, after those few moments of struggle, of going back and forth, and that. Probably my biggest and most self-centered moment as a climber, I did something I'd never done before. I said no. I turned around when others kept going. And I said no to my dream, the biggest prize of mountaineering. But my heart stopped pounding, and I felt at peace within myself. And I chipped away the ice that had caked over my face during those moments of struggle, and I looked up one more time to see and visualize standing at the place that would never happen. And I said no to my dream. And at the end of the day, everyone else who continued got to the top well past the turnaround time, and most of them died. And they couldn't get back down. Indeed, it was too late. And, you know, for the records, became the worst tragedy in Mount Everest history. In total, on that day, eight people died.
Lou, what?
So that's what happened on May 10th, 1996.
What did you learn from that experience, Lou?
Well, I learned, first of all, Jack, I learned that, you know, I went to Everest to face the powerful forces of nature. High altitude rocks, snow and ice to climb the highest mountain in the world. But what I discovered was that the bigger challenge was myself and the struggle to make the tough decision about what to do. And I discovered that the biggest risk I faced was myself. But I also discovered in reflection that what I needed for that struggle was also within me. And as I've thought about it, I've come to see that, you know, what happened to me is just an example of what happens to everybody in everyday life, the struggle within yourself to make the right choices, and especially to do the right thing when you don't want to. But secondly, and very importantly, I learned where to go for the strength in that struggle. I have many specific thoughts about what matters the most to determine the outcome, what did determine the outcome on Everest, about values and sources of strength for decision-making. But I think, Jack, the most important lesson from Everest is that in my everyday life struggles to make tough decisions about what to do, to listen to and draw strength from the voice of the heart. That part of the decision process that comes from the heart, the part that thinks not just about you, as that first voice argued when I was struggling and made the decision to go, but what that second voice said when it opened me up to look beyond and had care and concern for others and how my actions would affect them. For me, that was Sandy's love and concern and the safety of others. And to me, that's the best guide for making decisions in life, and is to draw strength and listen to that inner voice of the heart. And the other important thing that the Everest story shows is that sometimes, the best decision in life is to say no. Sometimes, the most important moments in life are moments that never happen. And there is, I've learned that there's just incredible power that comes from looking beyond yourself to see how the people in your life, specifically in this case, my wife Sandy and our love for each other, how that is such an important and powerful source of inner strength to make the right choices. Because choices and decisions that we make in life, that we face in life, you know, they determine the outcome of our lives. And so I would say, you know, among the things that I've learned from Everest, that's the most important.
We're talking to Lou Kosciusko. Lou, how did that experience on Mount Everest affect your faith in God?
Well, how it affected my faith in God is that, first of all, as I mentioned, I am a religious person. I have deep religious faith. But I'd say how it affected my faith in God is that it deepened my faith. And I had a journey. I went on a journey of understanding of this whole experience after Everest. And I learned and was able to see how God provided me with different sources of strength for that struggle that I needed. And of course, the one source of strength that I just mentioned was the inner voice of the heart. and how I struggled with my own ambition and desires and pressures to succeed. But that throbbing heart that I described for you that caused me to stop and reflect, I believe that that inner turmoil came from my going against God's will, and that this was God's way of opening me up and opening up my heart to make room to hear that second and louder voice, and to give me the strength that comes from looking beyond myself, the strength that comes from having concern for others, and because that second voice didn't focus on me and what I wanted. It focused on the safety of my teammates, and it focused on the security of Sandy. And I believe that that second voice was the voice of the heart and was inner strength from God. And believing that and seeing that and understanding that has deepened my faith. But I could also point to other connections to God that were part of my Everest story. And an important part of that was revealed to me years later, because several days after the life and death moments near the top, and actually we were trapped up there for 2 days during those storm days and thinking that I was going to die, but staggered down back into base camp several days later and seeing the grimness of the tents and my dead teammates, and I laid in my tent with all my climbing gear, and I prayed to God and I gave thanks, and I wrote a note to Sandy to be sent on a satellite phone. And I forgot all about what I had written, and years later, seeing what I wrote moments after these tragic events was very important to my journey to understand, because what I wrote in that note was this. I said, God's will and the strength of our love for each other turned me around a short distance from the top and saved my life. God's will, strength of our love, saved my life. That was an understanding that I had before there was any opportunity for any rational or thoughtful analysis about what went wrong. I knew, at that moment, that the inner strength from God was manifested through Sandy's love.
We're talking to Lou Kosciuszko, and I'm Jack Grissel, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with a most extraordinary human being, Lou Kosciuszko. Lou, when we say the Our Father, the part, not mine will but thine be done, most of us don't really mean that. It's very tough for us to learn to surrender to God. Talk to us about learning how to do that.
Well, one of the things that I've learned from my experience and experiences, in particular the experience on Everest, was that sometimes the most important strength we need in life is to say no. To our own ambition, our desire, to our peer pressures, the pressures to succeed. In other words, the strength to say no to my will. Going to the summit under the circumstances would have been my will be done, but it would not have been thy will be done. And I now understand that. I know that if one of the hardest things to control in our life is our own pride and our own ambition and our pressures to succeed, but seeing and living through this experience has demonstrated to me that if not controlled, it's destructive. I would still be there. I could have gone to the top of Everest, but I'd still be there, forever entombed in Everest ice and snow. And it, And I think of the Gospel of Matthew, where it talks about what good would it be for a man if he gains the whole world, yet forfeits his soul. And, when you're there, we, as climbers, we think a lot about the value of self-reliance. But one of the things that were very apparent to me from Everest is that there is no such thing as self-reliance, because you have to simply put your faith in God, and God will, He will take care of us when we need it. And there's a passage in the Bible: "Be still and know that I am God." And this experience has just deepened my understanding of that.
For most of us, or for many of us, it's tough to take risk. We have this fear of failure, the fear of the unknown. You've done a masterful job of overcoming that. Talk to us about how we get better at that.
Well, I've never really had a sense of fear of failure, but self-doubt, and I make the distinction between self-doubt and fear of failure. I know in life that in order to win at anything, succeed at anything, you must be willing to fail, and I found over the years that if it happens, accept it, and accept it as an opportunity to learn. As I say, throughout my career, I was always growing, and I would grow from my mistakes. And so I didn't fear mistakes. I didn't fear failure. I didn't want to fail, but if I did fail, I always viewed it as an opportunity to learn. And I always felt that if you're not failing, you're usually not doing enough. In skiing, we used to say, if you don't fall, you're not skiing hard enough. So that is the way to get ahead. But I make the distinction between fear of failure and self-doubt. It's typical for me to have self-doubt. And I know that many of the challenges that I face in life was all about overcoming that self-doubt. But I've always viewed the little sense of insecurity within me as a gift. I was never naturally smarter, stronger, faster, or better at anything than anybody else. And I knew that. And that self-knowledge always made me a bit insecure, but that sense of insecurity made me work harder, try harder, do more, and in the end, I would almost always succeed. So even though I had self-doubts, it never stopped me from wanting to do something, to grow, and I got to the point where I would expect self-doubts, and I would accept it, and I would accept it as an advantage that would lead me to achievement. So, if you want to get ahead in life or grow in life, take a risk, but manage the risk. As I say, I felt myself as a bit of an expert on the whole idea of managing risk, taking calculated risks, knowing what risk to take, what risk not to take, but in order to succeed and grow and get ahead, you had to do it, and just don't worry about failure, and know if you did fail, it'd be an opportunity to learn. But preparation, that to me was always the key to getting ahead. Preparation would lead to self-confidence. Self-confidence would lead to boldness. And boldness usually would lead to success. But you also had to be bold to learn. and to accept your own mistakes and your own shortcomings.
Last question, Lou. What advice would you give to our young listeners this evening?
Well, Jack, I would say this. For the young listeners in their early stages of their journey through life, I can think about three things. First of all is to understand that more than anything else, the quality of the outcome of their challenges in their life is determined by the decisions that they make, big and small, each day. That's the first thing. Second thing is that the biggest challenge they will face to make good decisions is the struggle within themselves. And third is the understanding that where they should go for strength in that struggle. So I'd say let your goals and ambitions be your drive, but let the quality of your character be the guide and your sources of strength, for it's the strengths within you that matter the most to determine the outcome of your challenges and your destiny. And you can look at the Everest story as an example and see many of the influences and sources of strength that mattered the most to determine the right choice in that instance. And in that instance meant life and death. But in other parts of life, it's also important. And some of those influences and sources of strength are to simply don't just follow what others are doing, and to keep your word and stick to priorities and think about others and not just yourself as you make your choices, and listen to the inner voice of the heart. And at the end of the day, sometimes, and accept the fact that saying no is sometimes one of the most important choices you can make in life.
Lou Kosciski, unbelievable. Thanks for sharing a fascinating life. Please keep up the great work, Lou.
You're welcome.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohon.